saw a couple items come out of FWP press office here. I thought we should talk about one of them is this first of its kind 99-year conservation easement that's going to be in Fergus County. It is got these components, critical wildlife habitat protection, opening up some new public access opportunities in the Big Snowies. But it's kind of unique in that it's a 99-year conservation easement. So the first of its kind there, too. And then there was this boat discovered. Some of our invasive species inspectors, they know what they're doing, right? There was this boat that came out of Minnesota that they say if it would have landed in Georgetown Lake, zebra mussels would have been here like they are everywhere else. So good catch on that. That's today. FWP Director Christy Clark is going to join us. Getting right into it here with Montana's FWP Director Christy Clark. Oversees the agency. We know about it, right? We're out in our outdoors an awful lot. We love the heck out of them. Recreation, conservation, public hunting, fishing, wildlife, state parks. It's all there. It's a lot to do. Good morning, Director Clark. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning, Tom.
Thank you. There's a couple of fun things to talk about here, too, but I want to see how your fourth was. Did you blow off a few fireworks somewhere?
Oh, boy, did we. We did. We were up in Shoto with the kids and had the good old-fashioned barbecue and parade and got to see lots of family from all over the state and out of state, and that's kind of our tradition. And so it's always fun to get back there, and Shoto has a great 4th of July. So it's always fun. Always great to connect with folks again.
Yeah, it is. It's important. I mean, that's why we are alive, I think, is to connect in that way.
Yes.
And we connect with our outdoors an awful lot, too, in Montana. FWP, oh, I don't have it in front of me here. I've mentioned it before. I mean, you got a gazillion things that you are keeping track of here. There's a couple things on the top of my plate I want to talk about here, and it's this mm-hmm. easement that's proposed for Fergus County. And there's more to kind of explain about these easements, but it's the Hanna Ranch Conservation Easement Proposal. It just came out, and people can comment on this as well, fwp.mt.gov. It's easy to do that. I think you've got that comment. Oh, I don't have it printed. That comment period lasts for maybe about 30 days or something like that, Christy.
Yep. It's open till about the end of July. So, and we'd love to hear from the public.
Tell us what we're, for a lot of people that don't know where the Hanna Ranch is, I know it's in Fergus County, central Montana. This is an attempt to maybe open up some land by the Big Snowy Mountains, too. What is this easement?
Yes, indeed. So this is, it's 3,652 acres. It's on the western foothills of the Big Snowy Mountains. And one of the real advantages to this is it opens up about 120,000 acres of national forest in the Big Snowies. And so for us, it's pretty prime habitat. And then also, you know, it's, you know, provides public access and recreational opportunities, you know, exploring the public lands and also just hunting opportunities. It'll be great. So we're excited about this. It's the first time we've tried a 99-year easement. You know, one of the issues that, you know, we're hearing with the perpetual conservation easements is, you know, there's some headwinds against those. And I mean, rightfully so, you know, things can change in 100 years or, you know, I mean, people had concerns about the perpetual nature of those. And
yeah.
So we thought, you know what, let's try adding another tool. Maybe that will be different. So this will have to go through the approval of the Fish and Wildlife Commission as well as the approval of the land board.
Who are we getting the land from, or how, I mean, who are we trading rights? What are we trading here?
So what it is it just places an easement over the property of the Hanna Ranch. So it's the folks that own it. It's very much, you know, working lands in working hands. And so this will continue as a traditional agricultural operation as it has, stays in ranching. And they, you know, they give up their subdivision rights and they open it up to public access. And so that's what we're getting from it. It goes through an appraisal process and, you know, it's nothing, it's all completely transparent. And it's, and like I said, it is on the website. We would be happy to have folks comment because I am curious to see what people's thoughts are about the 99-year. I mean, if you know, there was even a bill, I believe, Tom, introduced into Congress to outlaw perpetual easements. And there were a couple of bills in the last legislature that didn't get out of committee, but they were to, you know, to eliminate perpetual easements. And so, like I said, we came up against some headwinds. Our mission, you know, at FWP, of course, the mission remains the same, and it's conserving habitat while expanding opportunities for people to enjoy the outdoors. And so always looking for new ways to find those opportunities. And this, so we thought we'd try this. It's a little unique, a little different, but not unheard of either. I mean, other states do these as well.
What kind of flexibility is there in an easement?
What do you mean by flexibility, Tom?
Who has the rights? Mineral rights, water rights. Who owns the land? All of those things.
Yeah, all of those things remain with the landowner. Basically, what this does is it gives the public access to the land, and then Fish, Wildlife, and Parks will help manage the public access, so that it's not a huge burden. So Fish, Wildlife, and Parks holds the easement, but the land remains, the water rights, the mineral rights, all those things remain with the landowner.
Then what's the criteria for some of these easements? And I know I've hunted all kinds of land out there as well. There are some state lands that you go, wow, I'm not sure how I'm going to climb that and hunt that. And so people will go, what are we trading here, so to speak? This is not necessarily a trade. I imagine there's some, financial remuneration here as well that continues. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So the cost of the easement is around $3.5 million, and that is paid by Fish, Wildlife, and Parks through different funding sources that we have. We receive part of the recreational marijuana tax money that is, you know, tagged for, it goes specifically for habitat projects. And so we have funding that the legislature has given us to specifically identify these types of properties. And really what the governor's initiative and our initiative at Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is to find, you know, small tracts of land. I know that, you know, maybe 3,600 acres doesn't sound that small, but when you look at it relative to opening up 120,000 acres of public lands, it becomes a pretty significant increase in opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And how does that work? I mean, how will it open up that 120,000 acres?
So right now that 120,000 acres lacks access. It's, you know, you have to, well, you can get access by asking, you know, private landowners if you can cross.
Can we corner cross all the way to it?
It's not that show, Tom.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. That was last. All right. Yeah. Sorry. My fault. So there was no access to it. And this will just open up access. Go ahead and paint that picture again. I'm sorry.
Say that again?
Oh, go ahead and paint that picture again of what this easement looks like getting into this national forest parcel.
Yeah, so folks will have an opportunity to travel through this. They'll be able to access this. They'll be able to hunt and recreate on this 3,600 acres, as well as cross through it and continue on into 120,000 acres of forest lands that are in the Big Snowies.
That's and I think that is a real bonus here. How did this Hanna Ranch, did you guys approach them? Did they approach you? How do easements like this actually kind of, what's the genesis of it?
Well, we have a lot of folks that are, you know, in the regional offices, and they're the boots on the ground. We have the biologists that work closely with the landowners. And, you know, they build relationships and, you know, they talk about habitat improvements, you know, and if interest in access and things like that. And these relationships, you know, they build up over time, and they just, you know, offer these options. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, conservation easements as a good tool, and it is a good tool. The other thing, you know, we've worked to develop is what we call habitat conservation leases, and those are 30 to 40 year leases. And so that's another tool that is fairly new, a fairly new development that we've put a lot of emphasis on. And again, because, you know, folks are finding, you know, some discomfort with the perpetual side of things. But still, this tool, it also has some, there's some tax benefits to placing an easement on the property that the shorter term leases don't have, but this would still have those tax benefits. And so becomes a really useful tool for families that are looking for succession planning or, you know, looking to pass down, you know, the property to the next generation that wants it to stay in agriculture. And I've found these to be really useful for lands in particular that want to stay in agriculture and families that want to stay in agriculture. And so that's sort of been the emphasis. And I just want to say these habitat conservation leases, these are the 30 to 40 year leases. Those have become wildly popular. And just yesterday, the staff updated me and said we have 57 new applications for the, wow, the 30 to 40 year leases. And that's just increased year over year. And so, like I said, at Fish, Wildlife and Parks, we're just doing whatever we can, whatever tools we can find in that toolbox, you know, to help, you know, keep working lands and working hands and also, you know, protect habitat and increase opportunity for the public to enjoy the great outdoors.
Yeah, and this is what I think is exciting about this as well is that production agriculture is top of line or top of mind for a lot of people regarding this. So they're going to continue to, and it's 3,600 acres. I don't know if they've got cattle or if they're producing grain or whatever it is, hay probably. What are we easing here? Is it the risk of subdivisions? Is it the risk of breaking this up and we don't have production agriculture and we don't have access anymore?
Yeah. So this is critical elk habitat, and so it's protecting that as well as that large elk herd. So that's part of it, is just you know, looking out for the habitat, you know, and saying, you know, no subdivision, no development on this land. It will remain as it is, and it will stay in production agriculture. This is a working ranch, and they will continue ranching. But then also the, you know, the public access component, allowing the public to enjoy this property.
How's it managed from here on out?
So the management will remain the same. They will have the, you know, the traditional management tools that they use, the, you know, the grazing rotations and the things that a working ranch would do. And then during hunting season and, you know, those times with, you know, increased impact, they would have to manage around that.
Understood. Christy Clark with us here. Montana's FWP Director, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, has chops in the ag department as well, as she served previously as our ag director, grew up on the ranch there in that area, the Shoto area, she had mentioned earlier as well, and now headlining the FWP, which is a pretty involved agency, Christy, and there's a lot of people there and a lot of different ideas regarding it. I'm interested in how production agriculture, as people are looking at it, has risen to the top of mind for a lot of people. There's, you know, easements have been around and a lot of reasons for them, as you noted here, too. But I think I'm seeing more and more of a willingness or a desire to create production agricultural kind of easements. Is that happening in Montana? Is that happening around the West as well?
Yeah, I think, you know, as we talk about conservation and we talk about, you know, what are the trends that we're seeing, and you'll find this, you know, NRCS has a new initiative that they'll be rolling out soon. And it's very much, you know, partnering with working ranches and working farms. I mean, most of our land is still privately owned in the state of Montana, and we're going to need to lean on those folks in agriculture if we want to continue access. And so it's these easements, and whether, like I said, whether it's a 30 to 40 year lease or whether it's block management, I mean, there's a lot of tools to access these private lands. Conservation easements are just one piece of it. And so I think when I look across the landscape at, you know, what are the next big trends, and it is very much moving towards finding tools for people in agriculture to stay in agriculture, but to allow the public to enjoy that land, or even sometimes just protecting the habitat, you know, if it's, you know, critical habitat for sheep or goats or elk or mule deer, whatever that is. But just having those agricultural partners is definitely the trend that we're seeing. People put a much larger focus on. And like I said, NRCS, they have a new rollout coming where they focus very heavily on working lands and conservation efforts. So I definitely think that's what we're going to see. There's already a lot of partnerships that happen that don't have anything to do with fish, wildlife, and parks, you know, just nonprofits, you know, Montana Land Reliance and all sorts of other, you know, groups that are in this business too. And it just really can give, you know, it can give a real leg up for an agricultural operation. I've seen it over and over just in my lifetime, what a popular tool this has become for agriculture, especially as they're trying to transition to the next generation. You know, that can be expensive. You know, you go from supporting one family and then, you know, the daughter or son wants to come back and they have a family. And so how do you make that transition smooth, and how do you make sure that transition can succeed? And sometimes these conservation easements can just be a really critical tool for that. And the same with the shorter term, the 30 to 40 year leases. They give them, you know, a financial bump, and they put that land in, you know, protection for, you know, habitat and public access, and then they can go on and continue with their ag operations.
There's going to be a public meeting on this July 21st. I should have printed that. I don't have it exactly where that's going to be at. It's going to be in Lewistown, though, for yes. Public comment on that. Do you have that in front of you where that's going to be?
It's going to be at the BLM office okay. In Lewistown.
Thank you.
Okay, yeah, and it's on the website.
It is, yep, fwp.mt.gov. Sorry, I thought I printed that and had it in front of me here. I printed this one out. I mean, there's other areas for public comment, too. General Custer Fishing Access Site Repairs, there's a draft EA about that. Ham Road, Private Pond License Review Checklist. I mean, I like how you guys are doing this now. The FWP is sending out this newsletter about public comment opportunities. So look for that, fwp.mt.gov, and get involved. And also, you know, kind of a big applause, actually, for your AIS inspection stations as we move on to this muscle-filled boat that came out of Minnesota and was headed for Georgetown Lake. The takeaway here is that if that thing would have landed, we'd have had a muscle problem, and those are tough, as other states are finding out. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about that AIS inspection program, and then you know, this boat. Have you seen it? Was there pictures of it?
I didn't see the pictures of the boat, but it sounds pretty scary.
Yeah,
we dodged a bullet there. You know, we're finding, you know, states all around us have had, you know, positive detections in their water bodies. And so we are so fortunate in the state of Montana to be able to, you know, detect these at the boat check stations and find them. We have intercepted 21 muscle fouled boats so far just this year. So this was just one. It was a big one. It was a big one because it was, you know, the wake boats are a little different because they hold water in those ballasts. And so that's, you know, a source of contamination as well. But then this one also had, you know, it had weeds just hanging off of it that had mussels on them. And so this one was in particular with the water milfoil on the trailer. It could have been a really, likely the mussels would have taken root and they were headed for Georgetown Lake, one of our most prized water bodies in the state. We love Georgetown Lake.
Yeah.
So we feel like we dodged a bullet, but these guys are, I don't know if you've ever taken a boat through one, but I've taken my boat. They are professional, they're friendly, they're well educated and really good at what they do. So I mean, a big shout out to all the folks that man those stations, because we could not do this without them.
Well, and let's look around. Is Idaho doing this? Is North Dakota doing this? Is Wyoming doing this? Because we need a bigger buffer around us, so to speak.
We do. And, you know, I don't know if you followed what's happened in Idaho, but they've had detections in the Snake River, and they've had to corridor off sections of that river and kill the river. And that I spoke with in Idaho, the AIS is run by the Department of Agriculture. And she told me how awful that was, having to kill off a whole section of river and, you know, huge old fish, you know, rising to the surface dead. And that's what they had to do to get rid of the mussels in the Snake River. And then it was the following year they found another detection and had to go through a similar exercise. So it's not something we ever want to experience. You know, we have a whole incident command around this. You know, if it happens, if we detect in a lake, you know, how do we respond? You know, I mean, we have a whole plan around, you know, if this happens, when it happens, how we will handle it. There's another one. You know, we focus on this mussel, but there's also a golden mussel, not just a zebra mussel, but golden mussels are expanding in California. And so they're finding their irrigation systems are getting clogged with this golden mussel. And it's, you know, it's plugging up pipes, intakes, screens, to water sources. And they're really tough once they take a hold, you know, to get them out of the water body.
Yeah. And that's why that prevention is the biggest key. And you guys are on it. Montana has been on this for some time now. In fact, kind of one of the nation's leaders in prevention here when it comes to this. So, and there's locations. Do we need more locations around the state? How many do we have? You know,
we have a lot of locations, and I'll tell you, we are really, really fortunate that we partner with a lot of other agencies. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks doesn't do this alone. We partner with conservation districts. We partner with the tribes. And so we have a lot of other people out there helping us with this, because, Fish, Wildlife, and Parks could not do this alone. We have only four stations are staffed by exclusively Fish, Wildlife, and Parks staff. The others are with our partners. And so we're really, like I said, we're really fortunate that everybody in Montana has embraced this.
I'm proud of it too. Hey, thanks for coming on. Give everybody give everybody a pat on the back for us. It's summertime, and I know you guys are busy. So thanks a lot, Christy.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.